Good Monday. I'm Phil Picardi with the NPR News Update podcast, Minnesota's news on your schedule. Coming up, Vikings fans talk about Adrian Peterson being deactivated because of a child abuse charge. Howard Sinker talks about the future of the face of the franchise. And Austin, Minnesota welcomes newcomers from a long way away. First, let's start with this news. The Minnesota Vikings say that running back Adrian Peterson will fully participate in this week's practices and meetings and is expected to play Sunday against the Saints in New Orleans. Part of a statement from owners Ziggy and Mark Wilf. To be clear, we take very seriously any matter that involves the welfare of a child. At this time, however, we believe this is a matter of due process, and we should allow the legal system to proceed so we can come to the most effective conclusions and then determine the appropriate course of action. That from a statement from the Vikings owners Ziggy Wilf and Mark Wilf talking about Adrian Peterson this morning. The star running back was deactivated and did not play yesterday, but he will apparently participate in the practices and the game this coming week. On Saturday, Peterson went to Texas and surrendered himself. He is facing a charge of child abuse for whipping his 4-year-old child with a switch. The team deactivated Peterson for yesterday's game against the New England Patriots, which the Vikings lost 30-7. Matt Sepik reports.
News of Adrian Peterson's indictment capped off a week of PR disasters for the NFL. On Tuesday, the Baltimore Ravens cut Ray Rice from the team, and the NFL suspended him indefinitely after TMZ released video from February of Rice punching his then-fiancée and knocking her unconscious. Then Saturday, Phil Grant, the district attorney in Montgomery County, Texas, announced the indictment of Vikings running back Adrian Peterson on a felony charge of injury to a child.
Obviously, parents are entitled to discipline their children as they see fit, except for when that discipline exceeds what the community would say is reasonable.
Peterson was booked into jail in Texas and released after posting $15,000 bond. In Minneapolis yesterday, there was no shortage of fans willing to share their opinions about the charges he's facing. While waiting for a Green Line train downtown, Jeremy and Sandra Gatsky, who drove from New Mexico to see the game, expressed regret about the allegations against Peterson.
I just think it's sad.
I think it ain't my job to judge, and it'll happen what'll happen.
With yesterday's weather perfect for football, there were hundreds of tailgaters outside TCF Bank Stadium, many sporting Vikings jerseys with Peterson's number 28. Fan Seth Kinzer says Peterson's alleged actions are unfortunate, but Kinzer warns against a rush to judgment, and he says he disagrees with the team's decision to deactivate the running back.
He should be able to go to work. It should be, like, innocent until proven guilty.
Michael Gilmore of Winnipeg, another tailgater, says he'll neither support nor condemn Peterson until the criminal case is resolved, but says the Vikings did the right thing by taking the player off the field.
Especially with what's been happening with Ray Rice and the Ravens throughout the NFL and through pro sports. You have to err on the side of caution, right? You have to protect your brand first. You have to protect your image.
Hannah Lasley also agrees with the team's decision to bench Peterson. Like many fans, Lasley says she's not worried about what the player's absence might mean for the team on the field this season.
You know, we have a lot of other good players, and our defense is really good, so I think we'll still be all right.
In a statement last week, Peterson's attorney, Rusty Harden, said the player never intended to harm his son and regrets the unintentional injury. Harden also said Peterson experienced the same kind of discipline while growing up in Texas. Becky Dale with Prevent Child Abuse Minnesota opposes corporal punishment and says she hopes the allegations against Peterson lead parents, no matter how they were raised, to rethink child discipline. Dale says the Vikings should use the situation as an opportunity to educate the public.
I would love to see them champion positive parenting, positive human relations, look at ways that they could model practicing peaceful interactions.
Unless the case is resolved sooner, authorities in Texas say it could be several months before Peterson faces trial. If he's found guilty of the charges, he faces a $10,000 fine and up to 2 years behind bars. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Adrian Peterson's future with the Vikings, discussed this morning by Star Tribune digital sports editor Howard Sinker and Morning Edition host Kathy Werzer.
Do you think the situation with Peterson was a distraction for the team?
Well, Kathy, I've got to say that from my perspective, as somebody who usually hunkers down and watches football on Sunday, boy, it was really hard to concentrate on the game itself. And that's for me as a fan. I've got to think that no matter what the Vikings said afterward, that this was just something that was pretty overwhelming to the team. You take not only your best player, but a game superstar, and suddenly he's gone as of Friday, and you have to replan. Your concentration, I'm sure, is affected as a team. And face it, New England is probably starts out as a better team than the Vikings anyway. But And it's still, I've got to say, talking about the impact of Peterson on the team just sounds very minor compared to the story as a whole right now.
What are the options? I asked that question because a New York newspaper reported earlier this morning that the Vikings could trade Peterson.
I can't imagine a team wanting to take Adrian Peterson right now while this is so much in play. So they could trade him, but I just don't see that happening.
Well, now, talking about the game, the Vikings, I think unglued might be a good word to use here. They became unglued against New England. I mean, they looked pretty horrible.
Things unraveled very quickly. The Vikings scored the first time they had the ball. They moved the ball downfield. Matt Asiata, who is Peterson's replacement, scored a touchdown. And then everything fell apart, especially on offense. Matt Castle threw four interceptions. If you were at the game, you heard the chants for Teddy Bridgewater, the rookie quarterback. And there were flaws elsewhere, special teams breakdown. And the defense was probably the least culpable, but they weren't that good either.
Well, I presume then that someone will have a little chit-chat with the team, and as they practice here this week, who do they face next weekend?
Well, they face New Orleans, who is supposed to be one of the league's elite teams, and they're off to an 0-2 start. The game is in New Orleans, so it's going to be a test for the Vikings on many, many levels. And remember, the Vikings in week one beat a St. Louis team that will probably be one of the worst teams in the NFL this season. And they lost yesterday to a team, a veteran team that knows all the tricks. So we really don't know where the Vikings are going right now.
All right. Howard Sink, I'll talk to you later this week. Thanks much.
Absolutely, Kathy.
Star Tribune digital sports editor Howard Sinker and Kathy Werzer on Morning Edition and on the NPR News Update. A Minneapolis City Council committee today was expected to approve $170,000 for the police department to test body cameras on some of its police officers. Brant Williams reports.
Under the proposal, two different companies that make body cameras will get contracts, each worth $85,000, to equip officers for the six-month pilot project. The money will pay for the equipment and video storage systems. 36 officers from three different police precincts have volunteered to wear the cameras. According to a city report, the department will evaluate which company's cameras best fit the department's needs and select one vendor at the end of the six-month experiment. Mayor Betsy Hodges has proposed spending more than $1 million for body cameras next year. Burnsville, Duluth, and Spring Lake Park police officers are already wearing cameras. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
A Duluth woman who filed the lawsuit against one of the world's largest mining companies must now pay over $20,000 in legal fees. Dan Crocker explains.
Duluth pharmacist Laura Gauger was one of three plaintiffs who filed a 2011 lawsuit against the Flambeau Mine. Rio Tinto operated the small copper mine in Ladysmith, Wisconsin for 5 years in the mid-90s. In 2012, a federal judge ruled the company violated the Clean Water Act by discharging copper and zinc into a small stream. But an appeals court overturned that decision. The lower court then ordered Gauger and her co-plaintiffs to pay $61,500 of Rio Tinto's legal fees.
This is nothing to them, but it's everything to us. We're little guys.
Gauger says she's concerned the ruling could dissuade other citizens from filing lawsuits under the Clean Water Act. The company says the appeals court ruling restored its record of environmental protection. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
16 healthcare centers in Minnesota are getting Affordable Care Act funding to expand services as part of a $300 million nationwide program. Annie Baxter has more.
About $4 million in grants will be spread around the state.
People Center Health Services in Minneapolis is one of the recipients. The clinic is getting $217,000 to add 4 new full-time staff, including a nurse midwife. It will also expand its clinical services by 14 hours per week. Sara Noor is the center's chief executive. She says the Affordable Care Act has brought more patients with insurance into the clinic.
We're seeing our self-pay and people who need free care reduced by 15% already this year.
People Center Health Services provides preventative care to mostly low-income young women. Noor says the federal funding will help the center reach 1,000 new patients. Annie Baxter, Minnesota Public Radio News.
More than 140 soldiers from the Minnesota National Guard's 114th Transportation Company based in Chisholm and Duluth are returning home tomorrow after a 9-month deployment to Afghanistan. Dan Crocker is back with more on that.
The company moved equipment over 85,000 miles in eastern Afghanistan. Company Commander Army Captain Ryan Kester says it was an exciting mission.
Closed down 5 forward operating bases and traveled through all the dangerous roads and Regional Command East Afghanistan. Definitely played a huge role in the downsizing of Afghanistan.
It was the company's second deployment to Afghanistan in the last 5 years. They helped supply soldiers during a troop surge in 2009 and 2010. One soldier was killed during that deployment, 24-year-old Specialist George Colley of Walker. Kester says while they had a few close calls, this time the entire company is coming home safe. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
DFL Governor Mark Dayton and Republican challenger Jeff Johnson say they hope to start running television ads later this month. Here's Tom Scheck.
Governor Dayton's campaign has reserved nearly $1.3 million in ad time on the Twin Cities TV stations between September 23rd and Election Day. Dayton says the ads will focus on the accomplishments of his first term. Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson hasn't booked any time yet, but the Republican said he hopes to start running ads soon.
Our goal is to be on TV before the end of the month, so we may be a little bit after him, but not much.
Johnson wouldn't disclose how much he intends to spend on TV ads or what his ad campaign will focus on. Outside groups on both sides have already started running ads in the race. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Now let's head to Austin, a city that has seen big demographic changes in the past few decades. The meatpacking town started attracting workers from Mexico and Latin America in the early 1990s, followed by a wave of African immigrants. Now, Austin is attracting hundreds of other newcomers, this time Karen and Kareni people. St. Paul is home to the largest Karen population in the country, but as Elizabeth Baer reports, many are now finding a home in other parts of the state.
5-year-olds Mi Mei and Pa So sit at the end of a table, their little hands digging through a tray of crayons. They pick out pink and peach ones and wait for their teacher, Wendy Peterson's, instruction.
We're doing the letter L today. L says, like lion, okay? And remember, after you do it, you say L.
The girls are in a class at Woodson Kindergarten Center in Austin. 2 years ago, there were no Karen or Kareni students in the district. This year, nearly 100 have enrolled, including May and So. It's the first time in the city's history there's been such a large minority influx that wasn't Latino or African. District Superintendent David Krenz says the change has come fast. The Karen and the Kareni people have been driven out of their long-adopted home of Myanmar to refugee camps in Thailand, and they arrive in the U.S. as refugees. That means they can work legally, and Krenz says some have replaced other immigrants at places like Austin's Hormel and Quality Pork processing plants.
We look more urban than we do rural, but we're still in rural Minnesota. And it's not just here in Austin. If you look at Worthington, Wilmer, you look at other communities who have job opportunities that are needing to be filled, you're seeing people come to those jobs, whether they're white, they're black, they're Asian. It doesn't matter.
Working with diverse communities is certainly not new for Austin school officials. About a quarter of the district's intermediate and high school students are minority. At the elementary school, that number is about 50%. The district is currently trying to hire its first Karen or Kareni school liaison to help bridge that gap with the latest wave of newcomers. Krenz says Austin educators are still learning about a culture that brings new experiences to the city's classrooms. He gives the example of a lesson last year. A teacher asked students what they thought about when they heard the word forest. Children said trees, sunlight, animals.
And one Karini student talked about hiding, running away from the military that were pursuing us to kill us. So how do you, you know, take those experiences, try to incorporate those, understanding where each child comes from?
One way has been with the help of the city's Welcome Center, a social service organization that's been around since 2000. The center's executive director, Jake Vela, says in the last 2 years, the number of Karen and Karenni residents in Austin nearly tripled to 1,200.
They're moving here and they're settling here at an accelerated pace. And in the first time in our 14-year history, this group has surpassed all others, you know, utilizing the services at the center.
Vela says hiring two case managers to work specifically with the Karen and Karenni community has helped speed up their assimilation to rural living. One of them is Kapru Gold. She moved to Austin from St. Paul last summer and spends her days helping families secure housing, find doctors, and enroll kids in schools. On a recent afternoon, Gold walks into one of two new Karen grocery stores, stocked with everything from canned lychees to curry pastes and giant bags of rice. She says Karen families have moved from St. Paul, but also from as far as Iowa and North Carolina, to be closer to relatives who made the move to Austin first. She says the ease of small-town living has made Austin and other rural communities attractive destinations.
I like Austin because since I came here, a lot of people are very nice to me, you know. They're trying to, you know, like a welcome. I feel like this is my home, you know. I'm sure I will be here for a long time, I think.
Long enough, Gold says, to settle permanently here. In just 2 years, she knows of 15 Karen or Karenni families that have purchased homes in Austin, and three more are set to close this month. Elizabeth Baer, Minnesota Public Radio News, Austin.
And I'm Phil Picardi in St. Paul with the NPR News Update podcast. Glad to have your ears today. I'll have the Tuesday news right back here tomorrow.